All right, this is The Breaks. As always, I am the Fresh Prince of ATX.
And I'm Confucius.
How you doing, man? How's this week been for you?
Been just the same as last week, at home, you know, chilling, a little bit of illing. it's really all it is. How's your week been?
My week was, it was okay. Bit of bad news this week for me, family-wise, so, you know, but powering through it, and but yeah, it was pretty much the same of previous weeks in the house, getting out just for a daily run, and that's about it, and working from home.
Yeah, sorry to hear about, you know, your family. Of course, our prayers up, and
appreciate it.
I hope everything
that
works out in positive.
We're pretty strong.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about that, like, you know, it's one thing to, you know, go through something that, you know, happens in life, you know, family issues, financial issues, but it's another thing to go through it during Corona. It just does not help at all. Like, so
it doesn't, especially when, like, a family member is sick, and then we're in a pandemic and you can't really get up and go over there and see about them, and
yeah,
because like, they're sick and you don't want to, like, potentially infect. It's tough, but like I said, we pushing through it. We're pretty strong family. We're stronger than what I thought we were, in all honesty.
But well, that's a good thing.
We pushing through it. I go running just to take my mind off of it, and shower a lot, because the shower is my favorite place in the house.
People don't understand that when I tell, like, I said, look, the bathroom, I have some of my best ideas in the bathroom. I'm pretty sure I came up with the idea for The Breaks in the bathroom one day. I don't think people understand that.
Like, yeah, man. It's like, I tell people all the time, the bathroom is probably the only place where you can get uninterrupted peace and quiet to yourself. Yeah.
Like, nobody
it's
else is in
you,
there.
It's the place where you know you're not supposed to just walk in on somebody.
Exactly. I have a lot of great ideas. I plan out my day or decompress my day inside the shower or the toilet.
Facts. I reflect over my day in my week in the shower. So yes, like, it's my favorite place in the entire house.
Some people ask, why you take such a long shower? I'm in here thinking, that's why.
And I got but mine is awesome because I have music playing in there, and I'm a shower singer, so.
Oh, I know. That time when we were roommates, you'd been there jamming some Drew Hill. I said, Fresh trying to sing Drew Hill? He ain't hitting them Cisco notes, though.
Nah. I let him do that. We here to take over the airways. No matter where you're from or where you stay. 98.9, you in the place to be. Wake up. This is The Breaks. You could be anywhere but you ain't. You in, so let's proceed with the wave. Wake up,
this is The Breaks. But yeah, you know, it's always good to be back and discuss the goings-ons of the music industry.
Yeah, the culture.
Exactly. So, but first thing being, there was a Versus last night.
Yes, there was.
Ludacris and Nelly. Did you get a chance to catch it?
I did. I watched the majority of it.
I'll admit, I didn't. I saw maybe 5 minutes of it.
So this is like the opposite of last week.
Yeah, basically. I didn't get a chance to really, you know, I was driving at the time, so I didn't get a chance to watch it. But I saw what they played. I saw the jokes about Nelly's Wi-Fi being bad. From what you saw, what did you think of the battle?
It was kind of underwhelming to me. I kind of expected a lot more out of Nelly. I'll say that. I'll say Luda held up. Like, Luda played the joints that you thought he was going to play and should have played. Cornell Haynes Jr., on the other hand, did not. Nelly reminded me a lot of Teddy Riley and, like, his song selection. Luda would play something hard-hitting, and then Nelly would come back with something that clearly nobody remembered. Like, he played a song, I don't know what it was, and I saw somebody on Twitter say, Nelly clearly playing the songs only he wants to hear. And I was like, he clearly is. Like, I don't remember this song. This was a big hit. Clearly, I quit tuning out to Nelly by this point. But, like, it just seemed like he was on there playing the songs that he liked and he wanted to hear. And not really there to battle. Because Luda brought it. Luda was playing it all.
Which is not surprising to me. Okay, we talked about this before the battle happened. How many people kind of were just downplaying both artists. I saw people downplaying Nelly and Luda. But we also were smart enough to realize that for the first two major albums that Nelly had, that sold, of course, more than Luda's first two, Luda has more albums in the can that can last a 20 song battle. Right. And also just Luda being a radio personality, coming to the game the way he did, I think he's always had a strategic plan. So that's not surprising. He came there like, no, I'm playing songs that I know will help me be the undisputed winner. And Nelly just kind of sit back like, yeah,
he
I didn't.
He was.
Yeah, I saw the poll that L.A. Wilson always does of a Rap Radar. It said his poll said 82% of people said that Ludacris won. So
yeah, I like when I didn't catch it at the beginning, and people said Ludacris started off with Welcome to Atlanta, and I was like, oh, he's like, that was the first song he played was Welcome to Atlanta. I was like, oh, he came to play.
You gotta set the tone. When we did our battle, when I came out with Ghost Town DJ, I said, yeah, I gotta set the tone on this one. I gotta come out hard.
You gotta know I'm coming with it. It was underwhelming to me. Like, when I started watching, people was like, Luda up 7-2. And I was like, gosh, 7-2? And then somebody corrected me. Like, nah, it's 8-3 now. Like, 8-3? And I was like, bro, Nelly in here getting spanked.
Yeah, I know.
Like, what is he doing? Like, it was entertaining. It was entertaining. But I kind of expected a lot more from Nelly, knowing the hit records Nelly has.
Nelly,
he didn't play the Tim McGraw. That's what he did. He didn't play that, and I would have played that. I'm
good.
Sorry. I would have played that. I'm sorry.
I mean, it was a big song, but God, it wasn't a big song in my world. but, you know, I'm glad, too, that those two brothers got to get their flowers, because people sometimes, now because their careers are not where they were, you know, 15, 20 years ago, people kind of downplayed their contribution. You know, we've said it more than once that in the mid 2000s, Jay famously said, "Only dudes moving units is in Pimp Juice and us, and Pimp Juice is Nelly," because Nelly was selling a lot of records.
He went diamond his first album. So like, he kept iterating that last night as well.
I mean, I would too. I sold 10 million when people still bought CDs. Just every so time, you know.
Every time he played something off of the Country Grammar album, he was like, you know, I got a lot of them. You don't sell 10 million without having a bunch of hits on there. And he kept pulling up the little trophy that the IRAA give you for going diamond, and you could clearly see the diamond plaque for Country Grammar in the background. And I was like, yeah, I'd be like that too if I had a diamond album.
Once again, you see retired athletes walking around with their championship rings on, so I knew it.
Yeah, I was like, I just laughed every time he did it, because he kept putting the little trophy in the camera for Ludacris to see, and Ludacris just had like the straightest face. Like, I don't really care, bro.
Surprisingly, I didn't see the battle, but I seen what was played. Ludacris played his verse from Major Look Remix. I'm surprised he did that.
He did. I
forgot that song existed.
He played that, and then Nelly backdoored with his Rock the Mic remix, which I felt like was the only thing Nelly could have played, and that probably was the only smart thing he did all night when it came to song responses. But I got a take about something Ludacris said about his Made You Look verse. I saw the video clip of it come across my timeline on Twitter, and I just thought about it. And it reminded me of something that I heard Big Boy say, and Raekwon confirmed, that when Outkast did Scoot on the Bar on Aquemini, that they gave them all of this acclaim and attention and all these fans in New York. And Raekwon was like, yeah, man, you know, we really rocking with y'all. We was rocking with y'all before, but we really rocking with y'all now that y'all did this. And then it reminded me of something that Joe Budden said about Lil Wayne, that New York started rocking with Lil Wayne when he was standing next to Cameron and Juelz Santana and Dipset and was working closely with them. That's when they started to pay attention and give Wayne his props as a rapper. And then Ludacris last night said, man, that was a great verse. That was probably one of the best verses he ever did. And he knew he had to come hard on the Made You Look remix, because it was Nas and Jadakiss, and those were two of his favorite rappers. And he knew he couldn't just get on there just saying anything. He knew he knew his verse had to be great. And he said after he did it, he got so much respect from New York rappers and from New York itself. Like, he gained a lot of fans out of New York after that verse. And it just got me thinking, like, New York really held on to their arrogance for the longest. Even after artists in the South and the West Coast and the Midwest has showed that y'all no longer really run rap or hip hop. Like, New York will always be the Mecca, because that's where rap and hip hop started. But for the longest, y'all like other regions have shown that y'all don't run this. Y'all aren't really at the top anymore. Y'all have top selling artists. Y'all still got Jay. Y'all still got a Nas. Y'all still have legends, but y'all aren't at, y'all not sitting at the top anymore. Y'all don't dictate what is cool, but yet they never give anybody their props until somebody is standing next to a New York rapper. Then that's when everybody wants to say, oh, man, they great. But we were trying to tell y'all they was great for years. Like Wayne, we were trying to tell y'all Wayne was great. Like early days of Cash Money in 98 and 99. We were trying to tell y'all that the boy could rap, but y'all didn't want to hear that then. Like we knew Outkast was great on AT Aliens and Southern Playalistic. We knew they was great, but y'all didn't catch on until the third album. It was just like, bro, y'all held on to y'all arrogance for a really long time and thinking that y'all still had to give people a stamp to say that, yeah, they got it. They the one. They could really rap. No, Ludacris could really rap before the Made You Look remix. Y'all just didn't care to listen.
Yeah, because he was on, it was funny because he was on that when FUBU had an album for some reason.
Yeah, that Fatty Girl song, yeah.
Yeah, he was on the Fatty Girl song, and that was with Keith Murray and LL Cool J, and he held his own.
Yeah.
So Ludacris has proven before he could hold his own with any rapper, especially East Coast rapper. But you're right, I agree. New York, granted, I understand their point of view. They're looking at the America, birthplace of hip-hop. So their opinion on what a great rapper should sound like holds more weight than everybody else. I get that, because if somebody started making Southern music, we would consider ourselves experts on it, if, you know, which we do. When Drake puts a slowed up hook in his song, we're like, yeah, nah, I mean, that ain't exactly screwed, but we see what you're trying to do there.
Yeah, true.
But to your point, I do think sometimes New York uses that a little too much. It's kind of like, you know, instead of saying like this legitimizes them, that's what it comes across to me, like,
yeah, them saying you can rap
legitimizes them. Like they were already legitimate before y'all liked them. It's just, it's nice that y'all are, you know, are recognizing, but y'all need to recognize that they were doing this well before, you know, y'all, they caught y'all attention or got y'all approval. Cause like you said, it took Outkast doing a song with Raekwon for Hot 97 to start playing more Outkast music, but that was on their third album.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It kind of like it gave y'all the legitimacy. Oh, you know, this New York artist is rocking with them. You know, they good to go now. They good to go now, but they was good to go before. Y'all just didn't care to give them the shine. So exactly. Like, yeah, I just randomly thought of that when I saw that clip come across my timeline earlier. That leads us into, I guess, like, we're still on the subject of the battle, but who people wanted to see the next battle be. And I kept seeing Chris Brown's name being tossed around. I saw Chris Brown versus Usher, which I think would be entertaining, but I give that one to Usher. I think Usher has bigger and more impactful hits. Like, I think
that's gonna that'll be a generational battle.
Yeah,
like, there'd be people our age would say Usher, and then people younger than us would say Chris Brown.
I saw Missy Elliott versus Lil' Kim, or Missy Elliott versus Lauryn Hill. And look, I need y'all to quit throwing Lauryn Hill's name out there.
Because
if we're only talking about talking about solo works, quit throwing her name out there, bruh. And her going against Missy Elliott is just asinine. I'm sorry. Somebody said Missy Elliott versus Busta Rhymes. And I replied with, like, yeah, we're talking videos.
Yeah, we're doing videos, yeah. They changed the landscape.
Videos, yeah, we're talking videos, but, like, I think people forget that Missy had her own hits that she wrote and produced, and she also wrote and produced other people's hits. So she has a large catalog to pull from when it comes to hits.
I was thinking this the other day, maybe a couple days before the Luda and Nelly battle. I think, unfortunately, I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer, I think we're about to run out of battles. I think everybody that kind of wanted to do it is either already done it, or the people we get afterwards are not going to be as, you know, high caliber. It's going to be like, you know, people we forgot still did music, you know, like Cannabis or something going to pop up. You notice that the Dr. Dre and Puff Daddy talk died down.
Yeah,
Andre Harrell passing definitely didn't help. Jermaine Dupri already did his with Dallas Austin. I've seen people try to mention Justin Timberlake versus somebody. I said, no.
I missed that one.
No.
I totally
let us have
that
this one.
One.
We got it. Thank you. No. No. Justin Timberlake's on my bad set anyway. He tried to do some, like, you know, political posts and turned his comments off. I said, no, bro, don't do that. Don't do that. But no.
Well, yeah, I saw that, and I was just like, nah, fam, I'm cool, bro. Justin, JT doesn't need to be a part of this. I saw people say Backstreet Boys versus NSYNC. I was like, man, see, y'all doing too much, man. It's not relegated for the pop artists. This wasn't started, like, this is not for them. Like, if they want to go off and do their own, cool, but it's not for them.
Exactly. this barbecue is invite only. No, we got it. Thank you. Thank you. We got it. Let's have this.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
it's
man.
Fine.
And then I kept seeing the Bow Wow versus Romeo, and I'm just like, fam, quit mentioning this because Romeo getting his boot smoked.
I've seen some people, like somebody tweeted, said, y'all gonna try to say the next is gonna be the Five Heartbeats versus Temptations. Y'all just throwing out random,
yeah,
random
man,
names.
Yeah, y'all just throwing stuff out now, bro. I was just like, no. Just stop it, bro. No. Swiss and Tim have done pretty good at this. Just let them do it, so.
No. God, it upsets me. No. Stop. We got it. It's fine. We got it. Speaking of battles, we're doing another one. Yay.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
In response to the very successful first one, where we went 96, 97, we're going to keep it in the 90s, doing 98, 99.
Yeah, we're going to keep it in that nice golden era of hip-hop, you know, when everybody was getting all the money and the million-dollar videos.
Million-dollar videos, yeah. Yeah, that, like, and we've talked about this, of course, amongst ourselves, but now the podcast audience can hear it. So when I came up with the years 96, 97, I knew going in that 96 had a more emotional impact than 97. 97 had a whole lot of songs, but I knew that that battle was mine to lose, which was, it wasn't surprising that when people would vote on who would win, you know, 96 got the majority of the vote. But, you know, doing 98, 99, yeah, I don't know. I have 99 this time. I have 99,
and obviously I have 98. So this is gonna be an interesting one. This is gonna be a toss up. This is a real toss up.
Yeah, next Saturday, May 23rd at 8:00, it is the rematch, me versus Fresh. I told somebody I was doing it, and they're like, "Who are you gonna go against?" I said, "It's always gonna be Fresh. Who else would I go against?" If it's the Breaks Presents, who else is gonna be? I'm gonna go against Matt. What are we doing here?
Well, yeah, like you could go against Hanson.
Oh God, that'd be funny. But yeah, this, you know, and those two, like, you know, when I did 96, 97, I mentioned that was around the time when I was so young that I was absorbing music that was being played around me. I wasn't really picking a lot of it. But when you go into 98, 99, I was starting to pick music by the end. That's when I started telling my mom, hey, get that Jay-Z CD or get that Juvenile CD or get DMX.
So. Yeah, 98, 99 was around the time where I started to Yeah, that was around the time where me and my brother started to save our lunch money to, like, stack it up to go to the store and buy our own music and not have our mother get it for us. And we were still using Columbia House because Columbia House was still a thing.
You know what? I tell the people, they look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, nope. I thought everybody used Columbia House.
I thought everybody like did, too. CDs I thought that was, like, the wave. But, yeah, like Afusha said, it'll be taking place Saturday, May 23rd at 8 p.m. And then after that, y'all can catch us on air. We have a brand. We will be on air Saturday. We will be on air Saturday.
I'm gonna say it, get that word in there, player. The legal terms.
We will be on air Saturday.
You'll hear our voices on Saturday.
It won't be a replay as y'all have been hearing. It'll be all new music, all new topics, everything. So Saturday night will belong to the Breaks once again. It never stopped belonging to us, but you know.
Facts. Number one hip-hop R&B show in the city. But I feel like Maxo, I'm still the richest, but you know. But yeah, like, you know, and we went this battle, like I said, 96, 97, great years. But, you know, 98, 99, you really start to see the rise of a lot of people who are still relevant to this day. Jay-Z became the superstar he was.
Mm-hmm.
You had that girl group from Houston with called Destiny's Child start to blow up. So, you know, it'd be interesting. You know, it'd be a good year. Outkast became the dominant Southern group of all time.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be a great, 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 great battle.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
Because I, you know, last episode was a little negative because that clown. It was on his antics. I'm glad we can move past that. But
yeah,
this week,
that guy
was an historical moment for women in music. Doja Cat's song "Say So," the remix featuring Nicki Minaj, and Megan Thee Stallion's "Savage" remix featuring Beyonce were both one and number two.
It's the first time in Billboard's history that four black women held the number one and two spot on Billboard.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah, I think it was just black women. But yeah, that was. That was really, really dope to see. I know a lot of people campaigned. Doja campaigned for number one.
Yeah, she said she was going to show her breast if she got to number one and then didn't.
And then as soon as she was number one, she said, hi, y'all thought wrong. I would have done the same thing.
And the clip that she did on IG Live was just hilarious. Like, y'all got played. She's like, I'm not going to do that. I was like, y'all really thought she was going to do that, bro. Really thought she come was gonna on
do that
now.
For real. She wasn't going to do that. She's known to be funny like that. And then Megan said that had she reached number one, she would have put out a video for one of her songs off her Fever album, which she didn't do. She should have put out anyway.
She should have put out anyway. We've been waiting months.
Exactly. But that was just dope to see, like, you know, especially both those women being, you know, new voices in the culture, and having the assist from, you know, veterans like a Nicki or a Beyonce. We've been hard on Nicki because Nicki's done some questionable things in the last couple of years. But I was happy for Nicki, to be honest with you. Once again, Nicki's one of those people where if she would just kind of focus on just her talent and not the other stuff, she'd be perfectly fine. But, you know, this is one of those times I'm like, you know what, Nicki, good for you. Like, this is the Nicki that I'm happy to see. Like, somebody who's embracing, you know, other female artists. Because there was a point in time a few weeks ago, I don't think we talked about it on the show, where Doja was getting into it with some Barbs, which is Nicki's fan base. And people were trying to say that there was about to be an issue between Nicki and Doja Cat. Doja Cat saying, I don't have an issue with Nicki's fans. I had an issue with those two that were trying to cuss at me on Twitter. And she was saying how much she loved Nicki, and she was a huge Nicki fan, and a lot of her aesthetic is based on Nicki. And if you look at Doja Cat's kind of,
I can
of
definitely
like
see that.
The colors and the over-the-top antics, that's Nicki's thing. So, and then, of course, we talked about Megan doing the having Beyonce on the song, them both being from Houston, what that meant. So for those songs to be number one and number two, that was a great, great moment. It's dope to see. Now, granted, they're about to lose that spot, because I think Ariana Grande has a song with Justin Bieber that's about to go number one.
Yeah, Ariana Grande fixed the system somehow. She snuck some streams in there, like 600,000 streams out of nowhere on this song, which seems to be the sort of some controversy swirling about that she was number, last week she was number five, but this week she jumped up from number five to number one with like...
That's not surprising to me.
With 600,000 streams or whatever. And the only person I saw upset about it was that guy with the rainbow hair. He was the only person I saw upset about it. I didn't see anybody else really upset about it. And I think Joe Budden and them talked about it. And I guess they were saying, like, Doja Cat's label was cool with, like, dropping to, like, number. They were cool with... 6ix9ine song being number two, but they didn't understand like why they dropped and where Ariana Grande just had this huge resurgence. And I just be like, do y'all really not understand how big of a star Ariana Grande is? Like,
yeah, that's my, and you know, somebody, Tony Neal, who used to run a record pool in Florida, commented on, Tekashi's, you know, claims that Ariana Grande's label is manipulating these numbers to get her number one. Tony Neal said, what Tekashi fails to realize is that Ariana Grande is not only one of the biggest stars in the world, like you just said, has a huge fan base, and has millions of dollars behind her record label. But Tekashi, Ariana Grande's songs automatically get boosted to top 10 radio, or top 40 radio, automatically. As soon as she comes out, it's just automatic. So that right there adds to all her spins. Tekashi doesn't have that. He does his song Gooba, whatever it's called, has not been added to any radio stations except like the small pirate ones. So that's why his numbers aren't where he thinks they should be. He's looking at it like, oh, I'm having all these views on YouTube and I'm getting all these streams. I should be higher up. That helps, but that's all you have because radio is not supporting your record. And yes, in order to get to that number one spot, you have to have radio. Songs very rarely nowadays go number one without any radio play. NBA Youngboy is one of the most popular artists on YouTube. He has never had a number one record. So
yeah, he's like the number one streamed artist on YouTube like 3 years in a row and never had a number one record.
Never had a number one record. So and apparently to say so, is Nicki Minaj's first number one record? I could have swore she had another one.
Yeah, I seen other people saying the exact same thing, and I thought she had a number one record before that. But if it is indeed her first number one record, then shout out to Nicki. She also broke another record by Elvis that was set previously by Elvis. I can't remember what it was, but
off of Elvis records being
broken. She had the most hot 100s what it was. She now, when Say So gave her the record to having the most songs on the top hot 100, and that broke Elvis's. So shout out, Nicki's having a heck of a week. Shout out to her, man.
Yeah, man. You know, this music, all music, no controversy. I'm all for it, like I said. But yeah, like Tekashi's argument falls flat. And once again, he's looking at it like, well, I did all these numbers But yeah, they're all coming from streams and YouTube. You have to have the streams, YouTube, radio, like the entire promotional push. And there's no way you're going to tell me that Tekashi's record label is putting as much money behind him as they would Ariana Grande.
Man, I think because Tekashi's record label knows his
controversy is selling him. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so yeah, you're not telling me that 10K Projects is pumping as much money into his record as Sony is pumping into Ariana Grande's. And she's probably one of, she's probably, if not the biggest, one of the biggest acts on that label.
Exactly. So I don't, you know, Tekashi can shut up. It's, which will be the theme of every show that we have, as long as he's still active. He can just shut up.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
But now we can move on to our first segment of the show. Unpopular opinion with Fresh himself. I almost said Confucius says. To think about it.
That's fine. I think I messed up before. So unpopular opinion this week. I am finally going to do the unpopular opinion that I have been having in the tuck that I've been kind of scared to say. But I'm going to just let it out anyway. So I want to say, last month in April, Kenya Burris released his first show on Netflix that was through his new Netflix deal, Black AF. It's basically about him being himself and his family and him dealing with all of the, I guess, his, like his trials and tribulations of being a black writer, film and show TV writer in Hollywood and all the things that kind of black people have to go through within society while also being rich and being someone in the public eye, which like most of his shows are, they all have that, they all really have that undertone. And I personally enjoyed it. I personally enjoy Kenya Burris shows. Like I like Blackish. I like Grownish. It's a little, it's really cheesy, but I like it. I like Mixed-ish. I think Mixed-ish is hilarious. It wasn't needed. It didn't need to be made, but I get why it's made, because that's also a plight that happens in the black community too. Biracial children, they have their own plight. So, but after like it, I guess like the first week that the show was out, a lot of people, at least from what I saw, had some backlash toward the show, and they didn't think it was black enough, and you know it was a black show made for white people to understand black people. And, you know, they kind of ran with the theme that Kenya Burris is kind of like a one-trick pony, which was said in the show, which I thought that was just him taking a jab at himself.
But also false, because like, he produced America's Next Top Model.
I was like, they also ran down, like, the first episode runs down everything that the man has worked on. Like, all of that wasn't a one-trick pony. The man just wants to tell black stories. It's important for our stories and our perspective on the world to be told. But black people didn't take it that way. And so my unpopular opinion this week will be black people just can't be pleased. Like, we are so hard to please. We are so hard to make happy. All the time I hear and see people say that they want black shows like we had in the 90s. We need a show like Fresh Prince. We need a show like Martin. We need a show like the Wayans Brothers. We need a show like Family Matters. And I'd be like, man, that's cool. We can have shows. We have shows like that, but y'all kind of rag on them every time that they come out. Like, when they come out, y'all kind of, like, don't give it its praise, and y'all like it the first season, and then by the second season, y'all saying it's corny, and this was written for white people, like y'all did Blackish. When Blackish came out, I vehemently remember everybody loving Blackish, every black person loving Blackish. And then by like season three, oh, this is just getting corny. Man, they just catering to white people now. And I'm just like, huh? And then I just had the thought, like, well, what did y'all think Family Matters was? Family Matters wasn't the blackest of shows. Like, it was set in Chicago, but they never said what side of Chicago they lived on. And them being black, they either live either in the suburb or the south side or the west side of Chicago, because that's where mainly, especially in the 90s, where most of the black people in Chicago were living. But a lot of the themes in the show were rather corny, and some of the characters were rather corny. Urkel was corny, but we laughed and we loved it. But you could argue that that was kind of catered to white people for them to understand black people, or it was a soft pitch of what black life is like in America, but it wasn't really the exact depiction. It wasn't like Rock. Rock was a really real depiction of living in Chicago or South Central. Shows they both had short-lived tenures. Go look them up. But I just feel like when you give black people something that is for them or our perspective, even if it's not the most accurate depiction of our perspective or a particular perspective, we start to rag on it and we start to kick it in and push it in the dirt. And it always comes out that this is just something catering to white people. We're like, dude, what do y'all want? What do y'all want? Y'all want everything to look like Menace to Society? Because everything can't look like Menace to Society, bro, because that's not all black life is. And I think we talked about that on this show, or me and you, Confucius, talked about it off air. But like, that's not all black. Like, all black life isn't selling drugs and gang banging and everybody's poor. Every black person in this country isn't poor. There are plenty of affluent black people in this life living life that still have to deal with the ills of being black, because guess what? They're black and they still have these issues. And I feel like Kenya Burris and Black AF did a great job of depicting like what some hardships are for black people, like the episode about him being a black father and like, is he doing enough to be a black father? Is, you know, did he fail at being a black father? Or the episode where he was on this panel to critique this movie at a screening, and he didn't like the movie. Him and his daughter saw the movie and they thought it was a trash movie, but his wife thought it was just so funny, and she thought it was a good movie, and other black people thought it was a good movie and they thought it was funny, and he couldn't understand why they thought it was so funny. And he was just like, I think as black creators, we have to be harsher on each other. We really have to critique each other, which I think is true. I think as black creators, we shouldn't shuffle our feet around other creators and say, nah, I don't want to critique someone else's work, because they're going to think that I'm hating, or they're going to think that I don't care about a certain story being told. No, critique it. We black. We all from the same. We all come from this shared experience. Critique it. I thought he did a great job on that show, but clearly other black people didn't think so. So my unpopular opinion is you just can't please black folks, man. It is time for that part of the show where we get a little bit more wiser than we were a minute ago. Here is Confucius Says with Confucius Jones.
Now I got to be super pro-black. Now, once again, you know, another week in quarantine. We talked about it earlier on the show, how, you know, the shower and the bathroom are good places to think. I was on the toilet earlier. And this is a woman I follow, this black woman. She's very, very critical of, you know, different political topics and just America in general. Not critical down to America, just like these, just certain, like, these policies are affecting people of color in this way negatively.
Understand.
So she also could be funny because she's human. And she was mentioning the versus thing, and which goes back to what we talked about earlier. She was, you know, saying how she saw people mentioning, like, oh, they should do the Backstreet Boys and, you know, 98 degrees. And she was like, look, it's okay to, you know, want to include yourself and people of color's, you know, celebratory events, but sometimes just let us have one for ourselves. Like, it's fine, we got it. But with that being said, also, she mentioned how, you know, we have to fight so very hard to be included in certain spaces that sometimes it's very unfair that other races feel like they can just slide in our spaces without any question, right? We live in Austin, a city that touts itself as being super progressive, right? Mm-hmm. You know, everything, we're the most liberal city in Texas, and but in this city, anybody who's lived here for X amount of time, especially somebody of color, knows that this city is not as progressive as it likes to claim. When it comes to music, sometimes it's that same effect. As much as the city would like to think it supports, you know, urban culture, it's still to this day lacking a lot in different places. In every facet of music in the city, from shows, live shows, to radio, to just overall support. For me, and me and you've had this discussion, I don't know how many times, we could have a whole separate show about this, about how, and it's not just Austin, this is just America in general when it comes to.
Yeah, it's a countrywide thing.
Yeah. to like urban music, like rap and hip hop, and rap and R&B. How rap and R&B has to do so amazingly well to finally get some acknowledgement, as opposed to other artists who are definitely mediocre getting way more attention. The fact that Iggy Azalea was able to shoot past so many other female rappers and be successful was just mind-boggling. Vanilla Ice should have never been a thing. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch should have never been a thing. Early 90s, when you had a very active Ice Cube out there who had to almost cuss out every white person he saw in order to get some attention. It's very unfortunate that in 2020 we still have conversations about, you know, urban music finding its place and not being told to be put in a place. If it's popular music, it should just be played no matter where, no matter what. It should get the same type of recognition. There are artists in this city who I've seen sell out multiple venues, and they barely get any support from the city, overall city as a whole. There's no reason why, in a city that touts itself to not be genre or race specific, it's very genre and race specific when it comes to certain issues. I can say, okay, like, you know, if it's a hip hop show, yeah, play hip hop there. If it's a pop show, rock show, play rock there. But if it's supposed to be the show that is just supposed to be touting the best talent in Austin, or if it's a playlist you put out with no rap on it, or R&B, you need to kind of check yourself. This is 2020. Rap and R&B should not have to prove itself to anybody at this point. Rap artists, R&B artists have gone diamond. They've sold out shows all over the world. Those genres should not be relegated to their own little small space in the corner and acknowledged in a small way, because that's just extremely unfair. Once again, it's 2020, so cut it out. And that's my Confucius Says.
Once again, y'all be sure to tune in Saturday, May 23rd, 8 p.m. for our Versus Battle 1998 versus 1999. And then shortly after that at 10 p.m., tune into KUTX 98.9, the Austin Music Experience, to hear the breaks. We back rocking.
Yeah. Sounds so excited. Yeah. So see you guys next time. Hear you guys next time with whatever you prefer.
This week for Local Song of the Week, we have Naomi with her new single, Do You Mind? No word on a new project releasing from Naomi, but she promises more new music is coming. Now here is Do You Mind by Naomi.
Baby, can you trust me with your thoughts? Yeah, can you trust me when I get lost in my own thoughts that you have influenced the things that you do? You have take a peek into your mind. I wanna find you. I wanna know your mind. I wanna blow your mind, baby. Do you mind if I take a peek up the life that we could have, that we could grab? Make this last.
The Breaks Podcast is a production of KTX 989, the Austin Music Experience. You can listen to The Breaks show live every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced by Confucius Jones, Fresh Knight, and Elizabeth McQueen. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at The Breaks KUTX, and you can find more episodes at KUTX.org/TheBreaks.
Our theme music was written and performed by Austin's own DZ Brown. Production support provided by Art Levy.